You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 16th of July 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Matt, good day to you, sir. How are you doing?
You know, despite COVID doing all kinds of damage to the economy and to our psyche, you know, it's been great for me. I've been in a pretty good mood, despite it being a million degrees outside. Stanley's occupied talking to the deer, so he shouldn't be meowing into the microphone or anything. So it looks like it's going to be a good show.
I think it will be. And we are going to be talking about the economy today, the economy in China. And this is particularly interesting because they're just trying to get the economy going again over here in Britain. And I might have some comments that I can add to this, bearing that in mind. Well, China has become the first major economy to show signs of recovery and avoid recession amidst the coronavirus pandemic, with its gross domestic product rising 3.2% in the second quarter. The positive economic growth reported by China's National Bureau of Statistics on Thursday came after a sharp contraction in the first 3 months of this year. China's GDP shrank by 6.8% in Q1, the first such contraction since 1992, when official quarterly GDP records started. Economists polled by Reuters expected more modest results, as they had predicted a GDP growth rate of 2.5%. Analysts polled by Bloomberg have made a similar forecast, with expected growth of 2.4% in the second quarter. The new data signals that the country has become the first to start recovering economically from COVID-19, although the GDP for the first half of the year, the two quarters combined, was still in negative territory, down 1.6% year on year. Beijing avoided falling into recession. A technical recession is defined as two consecutive quarters of economic contraction. Generally speaking, the national economy overcame the adverse impact of the epidemic in the first half gradually and demonstrated a momentum of restorative growth and gradual recovery, further manifesting its development, resilience and vitality, the NBS said. We have confidence that the economy will continue to recover in the second half. Well, I wasn't expecting to hear this at all, Matt. I thought, this COVID-19 was going to totally destroy the economy, the whole global economy, and China would have been one of the ones most affected by this. I mean, they were the ones to first shut down. They were shut down for a full 3 months. It was Wuhan that was actually shut down. That is the manufacturing center of China. That's where all the products leave from to go out to the rest of the world. I mean, how on earth have they managed to avoid a recession? I mean, this just seems incredible to me.
Well, a few things. When I first read this, their massive gold reserves act as a cushion to protect their currency. They have the largest foreign exchange reserves in the world. They don't have a privately owned central bank. They can mobilize labor very quickly. There's always going to be demand, especially now that the situation with India has been stabilized. They're back in that market again. The Han racial majority is extremely racially conscious, and they do sacrifice for each other. But let's be clear, the manufacturing center is, I don't know where they got that from. The main center is Shanghai, Shenzhen, Ningbo, Guangzhou in the south, Tianjin. Those are the big manufacturing centers. Wuhan isn't even on the list, even of the top 20. So I don't know, unless you're talking about a very specific type of production, not to mention the fact that China is, in a, you know, they actually make things, unlike the U.S. They make things that people need. They have a well-educated workforce, as motivated. They have a massively growing middle class. And people today have confidence in the government because they stopped the virus's spread pretty quickly. And this recovery proves – this recovery is also from foreign sources, not necessarily from Chinese sources proves that all this nonsense about, you know, millions dead is has been disproven. They couldn't have had this recovery if they had that kind of disaster. And it shows you that very quick, swift government action with a, you know, racially conscious people producing things rather than just financial derivatives. And not to mention the thing, you know, people will tell you the Chinese debt is very high. It is not true. Chinese debt is mostly short term. It is not nearly as high as Western Europe or the U.S., despite most of the financial media saying otherwise. So they have a lot of cushions against this kind of thing. They have a lot of ways that they could make up for any kind of shock to the system. But I'm willing to say that the central bank is one of the main reasons they were able to avoid recession or now back to normal.
So quite a few reasons there. I think Wuhan is so important because it's the central transport hub. It may not be the actual manufacturing that goes on there, but all the manufacturing in the whole of China has to travel through Wuhan before it goes to anywhere else. And that's what I was led to believe. So when they shut Wuhan down, that meant that everything else had to shut down because they couldn't store it all, because it needs to go out to wherever it's going to be distributed to. And it couldn't be distributed because Wuhan is the central hub. So I guess that shows a certain weakness in the system with everything traveling through that hub. But that's the reason why it was essential to manufacturing, although the manufacturing may not have actually been in Wuhan. Well, China's manufacturing and services sectors expanded in June, beating last month's results and economists' expectations. But the coronavirus crisis still hinders economic recovery. The official Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index for the country's manufacturing sector rose to 50.9 in June, up from 15.6 in May, the National Bureau of Statistics said on Tuesday. A reading above 50 reflects growth in factory output, while a reading below signals contraction. This was slightly above economists' forecasts, as analysts polled by Reuters expected the index to stand at 50.4, and those surveyed by Bloomberg predicted 50.5. The statistics agency said that manufacturing growth was supported by stronger supply and demand, with the index for new orders rising for two consecutive months. In June, it hit 51.4, up 0.5% from May's 50.9. Data released on Tuesday also shows that another indicator of economic health, the official non-manufacturing PMI, came in at 54.4 in June, gaining 0.8% in 1 month. The figure has been rising for four consecutive months, but in June it posted the fastest growth since last November. Now, I think we can contrast this with Donald Trump. I think it was a week back or 2 weeks back, and he was talking about how America had the highest employment figures ever. But this was going back 6 months, I believe. This was going back to January before we had this shutdown. And he was talking about the figures then. So he was massaging the figures. Could there be some massaging that's going on with these figures here, Matt? Or are they genuinely far higher than was expected?
Well, since these are mostly from foreign sources, I tend to believe that they're massaging them lower. We had a whole show about the Trump State of the Union, which, you know, his economic statistics were awful. It was the weakest part of the whole thing. And, you know, we have to make it clear, economists in America are the most worthless group of people. Their predictions never come true. They were saying the Soviet Union was a healthy economy in 1990. I remember it distinctly. They've been predicting a Chinese and Russian collapse for 20 years. That never seems to happen. They were predicting it, just a few months ago. Now, this article that we just read from, that's from June 30th. So they were recovering, you know, what's that, 3 weeks ago. And they're always going to – and part of the reason that they deliberately predict lower growth or none at all is to signal the bond rating agencies to give them a bad grade, which actually will hurt the economy. So remember, these economists are absolutely worthless. But if it's been growing since June 30th, it means that the problem is well in hand, and And this is what, you know, this is what National Socialism does. That's the nature of the Chinese economy. American buccaneer capitalism is a miserable failure. A strongly statist, but an idealist system, the so-called socialism with Chinese characteristics, which is Chinese National Socialism, is able to mobilize people very, very quickly. And remember, one quick thing about the Wuhan thing is you know, China has many, many ports, Shanghai being the biggest one. Wuhan is just one of them. They're not just dependent on one place. So that's only partially true. But, you know, this is – chances are the numbers are far higher even in June 30th. Numbers are far higher. These same economists have been predicting a Chinese collapse every other week for the last decade. And I think one of the things that's causing the mobilization of labor to happen very quickly is a threat from the U.S. is giving the Chinese a certain level of patriotism and family bonding, having to hang in there together because the threats are constant. And that's done nothing but help them. It shows that China doesn't need the U.S. With all the trade restrictions and the depression of the American system, China doesn't need the U.S. China can continue to grow and manufacture with a depressed and even to some extent shut down U.S. economy. That should frighten Americans beyond belief.
Well, I've certainly seen so. There has been allegations that China, because of this, it actually looks like China is even preparing for this crisis. And we've got a report here which actually came from late May. While the world's second largest economy, China, has suffered its first contraction on record due to the COVID-19 pandemic, some experts argue the country has been preparing for a possible crisis like this for a long time. RT talked to economists to find out if Beijing may have foreseen the economic crash and about the Chinese government's response to it. Nobody, including Beijing, could have foreseen the depth and gravity of this pandemic, specifically the cryptic transmission parameters by which the COVID-19 virus spreads. It is truly a once-in-100-year pandemic event, said Shurabh Gupta, senior fellow at the Institute for China-American Studies. According to him, China was better prepared because it is in a much healthier fiscal position compared to most advanced economies and many emerging economies too. Gupta explained that the central government's debt level as a percentage of GDP is fairly modest, which means there is ample space on the government's balance sheet to ramp up policy support. Also, consumers' debt levels relative to income is modest, so they are not over-leveraged either and can open up their wallet. So what does that tell us? It tells us that they don't have a debt and usury-based economy and they're not all mortgaged up to the hilt and they're not all using credit cards. And I also find it interesting that this is an Indian guy that they've gone to rather than a Chinese guy at this Institute for China-American Studies. But what do you make of those 2 points there, Matt, that they don't have a debt and usury-based economy? And why have they actually gone to an Indian guy here instead of a Chinese guy?
Or American guy, for that matter. Generally speaking, despite the recent scuffle in the Himalaya Mountains, the India-China economic connection is huge. And Indians would be in a very good position to know what's happening in China economically. The U.S. media is doing a lot of damage control, claiming that all this is fake. They do this all the time. When they talk about Chinese debt levels, they include household debt and local debt, which they never do when they measure American debt or British debt. And that's overstated anyway. Again, these guys have been predicting China's collapse for years, and it never happened. They keep getting stronger and stronger. And so they're claiming that China's drowning in debt. Well, of course, that's just a projection. It isn't true. And even if they did, even if they were, it wouldn't matter anyway because of the massive gold reserves, massive forex reserves, and the fact that they actually are producing things, unlike the U.S. So they can handle as much debt as they can. So if anybody is going to massage the figures, it's going to be the Americans. And it did occur to me that Gupta is an Indian guy and that he would be in a very good position to talk about this. I would expect them to go to an American and have him say, like they all do, oh, China's in trouble, you know, the communist economy is falling apart, stuff like that. But as I've said many times, China is a national socialist economy. That's exactly what drove economic growth for the last 20 years. And that's what's maintained low levels of debt, especially at the household level. It is not a debt economy. It's not a usury economy. And they have a state-run central bank, which is, as I've said many times, is the reason why they were able to survive the Soros-provoked debt crisis in 1997 that almost wiped out the economies of Southeast Asia, Japan, and South Korea, allowing the Americans to go in and buy it up, destroying their economic independence. China and Taiwan both have state-run central banks, so there is no debt built in to the currency. So it just shows you that this is how national socialist economies operate and why they're able to respond so quickly, why they're able to recover so quickly. But people may say, well, they were planning for this, meaning that they deliberately did it. They were planning for a war with the Americans. That's what the crisis they were worried about. That's one of the reasons the foreign exchange is so high. They were worried about a war with the Americans that the Americans would provoke. So they put themselves on a crisis alert all the time. So they're prepared for something like this. It wasn't the disease that they were planning for, but a crisis, something like that, especially a war with the Americans. So, and again, they're in a position to do that. The state is stronger than the economy rather than the other way around like you have in the West. And that's why you have a response like this.
Well, I do think there is some debt involved in this, isn't there? Because they've bought up most of America's debt. No, I thought that was one of the things that they were doing, isn't it? Buying up America's debt, isn't that right, Matt?
Yeah, they're a massive creditor nation, and you know they're owed money all over the place, and but buying American debt gives them tremendous leverage over American policy. At the same time, a lot of this has been sold off. That's been going on for roughly the last 5 years. Partially because they don't trust the American economy. They don't think the U.S. can repay. But they still maintain quite a bit of American debt. I don't know the exact figures, but they have sold it off, suggesting that they are really worried about the American ability to repay anything.
Well, there's a second part to this stimulus as well, the fact that they don't have a debt and usury-based economy. And Gupta was echoed by Andrew Leung, international and independent China strategist, who said China is always very long-term strategy minded and is better prepared for any crisis thanks to its state capitalism. The state can direct massive funds and mobilize businesses and people more effectively than the West. The same capability was demonstrated during the Asian financial crisis of 97 to 98 and the world financial crisis of 08-09. Said Leung. According to Timur Umarov, an expert on China and Central Asia at Carnegie Moscow Center, every country is in a different economic situation, so their response to the coronavirus pandemic also differs. While numerous economic stimulus packages were announced by some countries, China has focused on recovery of domestic consumption, as well as on help for small and medium-sized businesses, he said. So they've concentrated on stimulating domestic consumer spending instead of concentrating on selling abroad. So these tariffs, maybe that Trump is thinking of introducing, that's not really going to affect them because they're encouraging their domestic consumers to buy more. This is something that they're trying to do in Britain at the moment, but not in a very big way. They're saying that they're going to give 10% off meals if you go out and buy a meal to try and stimulate the economy in the pubs and the restaurants. But I suspect that they're doing a lot more to stimulate domestic spending in China. What are they doing over there then, Matt, to stimulate the consumer spending?
Well, the savings rate is very high. There are all kinds like you mentioned, there's all kinds of tax breaks for this, all kinds of incentives for rebuilding and hiring. There's many incentives to keep them from out. They did have an outsourcing problem for a while. They were going to Vietnam and Thailand and Cambodia for a while and Burma. That's also stopped. And of course, you know, a country where the economic elites don't dominate the state, they can do that. Now, the Carnegie Moscow Center is a pure American oligarch thing. So they're enemies of the Chinese. And yet he's saying that their policy is the most rational one. They didn't have a stimulus package. They introduced a series of incentives to rebuild small and medium-sized businesses. Small and medium-sized businesses are being destroyed in America. The Chinese, especially the state, is creating incentives to maintain them and expand them there. That's their version of a stimulus package, and it's obviously worked. You know, state capitalism simply means it's not a debt-based economy. It's a socialist economy in the sense that it's communitarian and it's national. and that it's China for the Chinese, or especially for the Han Chinese. And you know, if you go to the Fed, they'll tell you China's drowning in debt. But if you anyone who actually knows anything, this is wildly exaggerated. They're always doing that. So here you have an enemy of China here saying that their policy is very rational. So all the crap we heard about the, you know, hiding the figures and millions dying isn't true. And this is exactly what proves it. And this is just going to continue. So as the rest of the world is falling into depression, China is now growing. And this is what happens when you have this kind of an economy and actual factories that produce things. I think one of the biggest things is keeping the outsourcing crisis was stopped. And this is one of the big benefits of having a state that's more powerful than economic elites. You had the same thing in Russia too. There's no more outsourcing. It's a trickle of outsourcing to Southeast Asia. And that was very important. Outsourcing is very hard to do there. It's not a good idea. That's one of the big things that they did. And that's now just increased and intensified now.
Well, it sounds like they're becoming self-sufficient. I mean, this is a nationalist economy, isn't it? It's when you're producing everything that you need for yourself and your people are the main customers and you don't need to actually sell abroad. Well, we've got another quote here from Timur Umarov. He says, despite US decoupling, the complexity of modern production processes makes it virtually impossible to de-link everything from China. Ranging from materials like rare earths to components and parts, even logistics, as most of the world's largest container ports are in China. The country is also rapidly upgrading its cutting-edge technologies, including 5G and AI, the strategist said. And in Britain, they've just cut Huawei off from being involved in 5G. In Britain, which I suspect will it has upset China, but I think that's a good thing for Britain because it means that we're going to have to go to Europe for it, and it looks like Nokia are going to step in. Continuing with the quotes, there is no need to look for some targeted actions by the Chinese government to prepare the country's economy for the next crisis, said Sergei Lukonin from the Institute of World Economy and International Relations. This economist, who specializes in Chinese studies, pointed to the fact that China's economy has become more stable over the past decade. They now understand where to move further, particularly during this crisis when everything is linked with the internet and digital services. I mean, I think this could lead to China becoming a first world country, really, if they don't need these other countries outside to sell them stuff. They can manage just on their own, and then they sell, you know, things like what they say here, rare earth and some of these bits and pieces outside. But if they don't actually have to do that, then, you know, they're really in a good position here, aren't they, Matt? With the rest of the world, you know, going into recession after COVID, this has put them right at the top. I would say.
Again, it's from the same policies that we've already mentioned. You know, they have a crisis mentality because they're always being threatened by the West. They're always being blamed for American outsourcing, as if they're going to the U.S. and stealing capital and bringing it back to China. Remember, the U.S. government was financing their outsourcing to China. It's not their fault that they've attracted so much foreign capital. And so many of these exports are not really Chinese exports. They're from American companies who export to the U.S. But they, in the press, they'll call it Chinese exports, make it seem like somehow the Chinese government is involved. The only difference is, again, because the state is more powerful than economic elites, you have to have 50% China, at least 50% Chinese ownership. There's all kinds of stipulations when you invest in China. You have to help the local economy. You have to help the local people. You can't bring that many foreigners over to work. It has to benefit China in almost every way. But because they're always being threatened, because they're always being accused of unfair practices, because, you know, the U.S. is trying to pick a fight with them, they've decided that, you know, the biggest crisis would be for the U.S. to be cut off from them. Therefore, being self-sufficient became a priority. And given everything we've already said, they could actually mobilize. There's only a few countries in the world that could pull that off. Russia can do it, no problem. And actually, in the Tsarist era, they came very close to it. The U.S. can do it, but because of the nature of the oligarchy, they won't. And China. The only thing that China really needs from abroad is fuel. That's the one thing they don't make domestically. Everything else they can. And China's been a first world economy, the first world military for a very long time, maybe at least, 15 years. And as I've said before, they don't need the U.S. And it is true. You're right. It's good. The British don't have to go to a foreign company to take care of the telecommunications stuff. But that was, that was political, not economic. So it is this, this is classic national socialism. This is classic nationalist economic policy. This is what happens. And so you have Lukonin talking about stabilization. You have the rest of the economic world saying they're going to collapse at any minute. And don't forget, this article that we're reading from is from May 30th. So well, they're already talking about this way back then.
Well, let's move up to date and look at an article from July the 7th. Beijing has continued increasing its foreign exchange reserves, already the world's largest, adding $10.64 billion in June to its $3.112 trillion central bank data showed on Tuesday. The figure is less than the $3.120 trillion expected by economists who were polled by Reuters. The bullion reserves stayed unchanged from the end of May at 62.64 million fine troy ounces. The value of gold holdings rose to $110.76 billion at the end of June from $108.29 billion at the end of May. The increase in foreign exchange reserves was due to the strengthening of the yuan and the global asset prices rebound. Foreign inflows into Chinese stocks and bonds have picked up lately as investors bet on an economic rebound. Strict capital controls have also helped China to keep outflows under control over the past year, despite the shock from the COVID-19 pandemic, the trade war with the United States, and weakening economic growth. Statistics showed the yuan rose 0.99% against the US dollar in June, while the US dollar fell about 0.97% in the same month against a basket of other major currencies. Now, I've got a question about this, Matt, because I would have thought that they would have been dumping their foreign reserves and buying gold. But if you say they need to get fuel from outside, is that why they're keeping these foreign reserves? Why would they not be just getting rid of foreign reserves when the dollar is, why would they want dollars when it's lost 0.97% while the yuan has gone up by 0.99%? It doesn't seem to make any sense to me. Perhaps you can explain that one for me.
Well, it's not just dollars. Foreign reserves can be a lot of things. It could be foreign bank deposits, treasury bills, government securities, gold reserves, even special drawing rights like at the IMF and things like that. All of this is included in foreign reserves. Reserve assets are extremely important. It cushions the economy from any crisis. So if the U.S. market was completely cut off, totally cut off, they have the reserves to make that up. Sometimes, gold is included in foreign reserves because of how stable it is. And let's keep something in mind. This is very important to remember. China's gold reserves are $108 billion in May of 2020. And the U.S., while claiming that you would look at on paper, the U.S. is the largest holder of dollars in the world. You'll see this on almost every website, and it isn't true because there's been no audit of American gold reserves since 1953. The proof of this is when the Germans wanted some of their gold back, the U.S. couldn't give it to them. It took 7 years for them to get it all together. When you owe that much money, when you owe trillions of dollars, that gold doesn't belong to the U.S. There's actually very little gold in Fort Knox. So it's just one more myth that you see backed up by the Financial Times, the New York Times, claiming that the U.S. has more gold than anybody else. They don't own a stick of gold spread out in places like West Point or Fort Knox. And when a country calls their gold in, the U.S. can't produce it. It isn't there. There's a reason. And actually, Ron Paul is one of the people who wanted to audit that Fort Knox, and they refuse to do it because there really isn't any gold there, at least gold there that's not owned by the U.S. The U.S. has no cushion. The Chinese does. The U.S. is in an extremely unstable situation. So foreign reserves are extremely important, especially for the Chinese. And sometimes, depending on who you read, gold is actually considered part of the foreign reserve basket. So it just goes to show the health of the country. Foreign reserves is a cushion. It's a buffer. and they may need it very soon.
Well, let's take a final look back at what they were saying in May to finish with. China started reopening after the coronavirus-related restrictions, but it could still take at least till the second half of the year to fully rebound, John Quelch, Dean of the University of Miami Business School, told Boom and Bust. Although 91% of companies and businesses reopened, only 40% roughly are operating at full capacity, the professor said. He added that consumers in China have been left without sufficient funds to spur the economy. He says, so I think the predictions about a rapid bounce back are probably a little bit overdone. The economic fallout from the pandemic has not stopped the US from attacking China, including tariff threats and pushing companies to remove their production from the country. However, this might not be an easy task, especially when it comes to middle-range products, which are set to become the most in demand amidst the crisis. China championed its position in the segment as the factory to the world, Quelch noted, adding that the crisis has made people both in the US and Europe poorer, and they would need an experienced low-cost manufacturer. Well, he's still thinking in the old way, isn't he? He's thinking, oh, people need to buy more, so they need to buy it cheaply from China. Well, no, but we need to be making it ourselves to stimulate our own economies. Shouldn't he be saying that, Matt? Isn't he saying the opposite of what people should be doing here?
Yeah, this is exactly what I mean. I included this because it shows that what these people were saying, this is from May 5th, they're saying, oh, the Chinese economy is going to take a long time to recover. And here we just covered the fact just a few minutes ago that the Chinese recovery has been substantial. It shows you how worthless these people are. And yeah, he's thinking in the old way. He doesn't realize that China is a first world country that is more or less self-sufficient and actually produce things. So they were trying to make believe that China's finished, as they always do, in May 5th. And now some of these same people are saying how impressive the Chinese economic recovery is. The economic professors in the U.S., generally speaking, are absolutely useless people.
If we want to get our economies going again, we have to look at nationalist economics. We really do. We need to start producing things, and we need to have enough money ourselves to actually buy those things so that we become self-sufficient. And that could very well happen. That could very well be the end result of this COVID pandemic. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.